You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess niggas can't be choosy. Attention from my music, want it to be left alone in public, excuse me.
Good morning on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you. So, good Tuesday. Hope it's good wherever you are. We're going to talk about bad things today. But not going cuckoo. If you are going cuckoo, though, you know, I get a fairly common, if you ask me what's the most common question I get after doing this for about a year and a half, I'll tell you what it is. Hey, I've got a friend who's struggling. What advice can you give me? How do I help them? That's the most common question I get. What have you learned? So I'll ask a couple questions. You know, what's the issue? Married, not married? You know, things like that. So, and the prototypical answer is PTS and married, although not happily right now, but could be happily in the future. The answer I give is basic mental health 101, and that is the way the VA operates. They have big VA, right? And then post-Vietnam, they stood up what are called vet centers. And so I want to say Saxby Chambliss, but I'm not sure that's him. And so what the vet centers were, they were established by Congress in 1979. And they were established because Vietnam veterans asked for them. And so what they were designed to do is... what they were designed to do is to provide outreach into the community, so there would be a presence there, and they would provide veteran services, and it could be a variety of services, but the number one obviously was post-traumatic stress. And the first one opened its doors in Madison, Wisconsin in November of 1981. And so after the Gulf War, Congress extended the eligibility of who could, you know, go there for services. And there was a whole list of them, right? So it's basically any conflict ever fought. There's 200 of them nationwide. So chances are there's one in is one around you, okay? And they deal with things like readjustment counseling, group readjustment counseling, marital and family counseling, and then stuff like benefit assistance, being a liaison with other benefit providers in the county and the state, right? Job counseling. Substance abuse. So they do all that stuff. So so that's the advice that I get. Hey, reach out. First step is, have they plugged into the VA yet? Well, might have gone there once and didn't like it and left. Okay, that's the wrong answer, but it's understandable. You got to fight with the VA, or you got to fight with the county VSO guy. That's where it's at. Okay, unless you can afford to do it for free. But you can't quit. And the trick is you got to find somebody at one of these places that you can have a conversation with. Now, a shortcut, and this is kind of blunt, but I'll say it anyway. I ask them, you know, how screwed up is XYZ man or woman? And the majority of them are men. How screwed up is he? Is he bad screwed up? Well, you know, he sleeps on the couch now. He's gained weight, depressed, off and on, good with the kids and then short with the kids. Okay. Has he ever talked about suicide? Says he understands why guys do it. Says he'd never do it. Okay. That's pretty normal. Okay. It's pretty normal. So just, he's got to find somebody that he can plug into. And then once somebody plugs into that and can relate to somebody and have a conversation, then guess what? They begin to deal with their stuff. So I offer that as somebody sent me an email the other day. Hey, can I ask you a question? Yeah. Where do I start? I don't know why that was rattling around in my head this morning. So vet centers. If you don't have a vet center, contact your county veteran services officer. Okay. Short is VSO. And ask them where in the county do these services exist? How do I do this? If you live in a big city, it's not going to be an issue. If you live in a medium sized city, it's not going to be an issue.
Okay.
And if you call them up, like, for instance, the first time I ever went to kind of get any kind of counseling or help. And I will tell you this, I was having issues with an idiot that I worked for, and I was still on active duty, and I didn't particularly want to go to see anybody on active duty, but I think my unhappiness and my frustration with that idiot, the worst officer I've ever worked with in my life, right, a full-bird colonel, regimental headquarters commander. Yeah. Regimental commander, essentially. I mean, the biggest idiot I've ever seen. One of those guys who annihilates the morale in multiple units because of his micromanaging chicken shit. That guy. Yeah, that guy. Anyway, and then we were understaffed, so I was working my ass off. And you just had this idiot rolling around doing idiotic things, making your life miserable. And the only thing you can do is because at the time we were deploying, redeploying guys all the time, units all the time. And the only thing you can do is work harder for them, right? That's your job. But you have this stuff inside of you from multiple combat deployments. And, right? And you feel this thing like, I want to kill that guy. And, like, again, when I say that, it's not like you say it when you're in high school, right? It's like, I want to put a bullet in his head. Like I want to do that. And then you think, well, that ain't right. What do I do? You know, who do I go talk to? And then, you know, I mean, as you get more and more, as it affects you more and more, so often it's not the, often it's something else that is either frustrating or whatever in life that kind of activates this other stuff that you have unresolved inside of you. And so you need to go talk to somebody. The other shortcut I will give you for people that have them in your community is plug into the Marine Detachment in your area. And, I mean, I will tell you that those things are gold. I mean, just they're Marines. They've gone down this path of benefits and help and all that. They can tell you the shortcuts, and they tend to be great, great guys in their community, too. And they can help with jobs. They can help with all kinds of stuff. And it's not a miracle. You're not going to walk through and, right, and grow your hair back and lose 30 pounds or whatever. But they're Marines, and it's a comfortable place to be. And they've got out, and they've walked down the same path, and so they've got good answers. So anyway, I toss that out, that if anybody in your presence ever asks you, hey, you got any advice? Give them that advice. The vet centers, you can look them up. And so, pretty cool. Yeah, and it's a post-Vietnam. It's a post-Vietnam event. The vet center, right? And your records when you get seen at a vet center, all right? And this is their thing of confidentiality. Treatment records are confidential and secured in locked files. Records are released only with the veteran's authorization. So there's people that are nervous, whether because they want to work in law enforcement. They already have careers in law enforcement or whatever. And so the vet center, your record stays there locally, and it doesn't become electronically part of Big VA. It stays at the vet center. So all that are reasons to start there. So anyway, I offer that to you free of charge. My lieutenant hasn't shown up yet. I know he's in the continental United States because I got a message. And but he hadn't shown up yet. So I imagine either at the armory or helping guys get – he has his truck, so helping other people get their truck and driving people home and stuff like that or whatever they're doing. I saw something, and I'll tell you what we're going to do here. Right now, and then I have one more comment as we get the show going. One of my old lieutenants, who I stay in touch with, we're friends on Facebook. I saw a comment he made. I want to talk about it. And then we're going to talk about the direction of the Department of Defense today. And I want to get, so John Ubaldi is going to join me. All right. He's a retired Master Gunnery Sergeant, 0369, 0311. So infantry guy, for those of you who don't know those words. Anyway, I want to talk to him about the Paris Island verdict, the Army opening up categories of people that have had mental health issues in their past that they will now accept, get his thoughts on that, and also his thoughts on the Navy and the direction. I would tell you that if you were looking for trend lines in the Department of Defense, the majority of those trend lines, I think, would be down. And I think the nation ought to be rightly concerned about the Department of Defense. First of all, the Marine Corps was downgraded by the Heritage Foundation relative to mission accomplishment from marginal to weak because of the state of Marine aviation. Okay, now that's been presided over by the Pentagon and headquarters Marine Corps. Everybody ought to be concerned about that. The Navy is, the collisions are bad, right? And those are huge red flags in the United States Navy. And now you have two SEALs. In accused of, and again, we'll wait to see what NCIS gets out of this, but one, possibly embezzling money from a witness fund that they're charged with, and two, murder of a United States Army staff sergeant who discovered it. So that trend line just went further south. So the Department of Defense, so we're going to talk about that a little bit today, overall trends. And Ubaldi will join me here in about 14 minutes. Get his reaction to the whole Paris Island thing. Joe Corbett's a buddy of mine. I first met him. He went through the infantry officer course. I was an instructor. He a lieutenant. And he made this comment. I saw on ESPN that NFL teams are wearing military-inspired stuff on their costumes. Question mark. Stop. Ask yourself why VFWs and American Legions refuse to show your overpaid bullshit on their TVs. You said you don't do it to offend vets. We said it does. Leave us off your stupid effing costumes. You don't rate. So, interesting. Yeah, the NFL is right now, it's not in a good way. It's a business that seemingly can't find the door to a pretty simple issue. And I find it extremely interesting that the NBA has not gone down that road. I think the NBA as a group, both the players and the owners, say, you know what? That whole issue is bad for business. There's other ways for us to articulate that, and we should do that. But doing it that, using that forum, that publicly, probably not a good thing for us as a whole. However, on a bright note relative to all that, it could get you to be GQ's Man of the Year. So congratulations to Colin Kaepernick. GQ selling magazines, making him their Man of the Year. I will echo the sentiment of other people. If you were looking for an athlete to make your Man of the Year, probably J.J. Watt, who raised $36 million for the people in Houston after their hurricane, he might be a better alternative. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. Because I would tell you this, if you asked 100 people what exactly the protest is about in the NFL, they don't know because we don't know. Is social injustice? I guess that would be my answer. Social and it would be given like this: man on the street interview. Hi, can we have a second of your time? The guy's got a microphone. I'm a talker. Sure. What's up? Do you watch the NFL? I used to. I don't anymore. Are you a veteran? Yes. Former Marine. Okay. So I've got one question for you. Sure. What is the protest about? Me. Social justice? I'm not sure anymore. Okay, thanks. Now, I would tell you that I'm I pay attention to the news. What does an average person who just goes and works and doesn't pay that much attention to the news, what do they say? I don't know. So, anyway. All right. Uvalde's going to join us. Still waiting for my son to get home. And Tuesday, we'll check headlines around the Marine Corps and the DOD here in a few minutes. But before we get to I'll tell you what, I would recommend, if you like reading relatively interesting stuff, go ahead and check out, there's an article in Marine Corps Times, and the issue is Scout Sniper Charges Dismissed. And then if you click on that, there's another story inside of that. And the title of that is Amos Investigation Unsealed, Anger, Confusion, and Controversy. And so there's an article, about a 10-page article about the investigation, written by Andrew de Grand Prairie, looks like is his name. And then there's the actual investigation itself about undue command influence. UCI, as it's known. So I would tell you, pretty interesting reading there. Pretty interesting reading. And so the United States Marine Corps band makes the morning official. Good morning to you. early in the week, a little moto.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
All right. Cloudy in 47 in Quantico. Clouds of 52 at Camp Lejeune. Clouds and 66. Granbury, Texas. Montana, pretty nice. Mostly cloudy, 38. 29 Palms, mostly sunny, 57. Pendleton, cold. California, on along the coast, in the 40s. It's Arctic temperatures, man. Mostly cloudy, 45. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 73. Raqqa, 67 under clear skies and dark. And in Marja, they broke the 60 barrier right now. It's going to be cold. Marja very much like 29 Palms in terms of weather. Dark, clear, 59 degrees in Marja. Mostly cloudy and 53 along the coast of Southern California. Looking for a high of 73 today. 75 tomorrow, 73 on Friday. Cloudy skies all 3 days. All right. You know what? I'm not even going to take a commercial. We're not even going to take a break. We're going to keep going. We're going to do headlines in the Marine Corps. You know, we were talking a little bit ago about three carrier battle groups in the Pacific. We all ought to be curious to see how long that goes on for. Certainly made a statement during the president's trip, but you can fake it for a week or two. So we're going on 2 weeks that these things are going to be underway. Probably 2 weeks before that underway from wherever they're home ported to get to where they're at. Maybe three to operate there, to operate in the area a little bit before things got going. So, So the question is, how long will those remain? So keep your eye on that story. The passing of a Medal of Honor recipient. His name is Thomas Hudner. Died at the age of 93 in Boston. And I first saw this story, and Mike Musselman and I talked about it, but he was awarded the Medal of Honor during the Korean War in 1950. His plane came under enemy fire, and he crash-landed in an unsuccessful effort to save the life of his wingman and friend, Ensign Jesse Brown, the Navy's first black combat pilot. And so I read that, and I remember thinking, are you kidding me? And so Mike and I got to talk about a series of stories written by a guy And I told Mike a story, and he said, you know, that reminds me. It turns out a guy, the same guy, has written books about both these events. And the event Mike was talking about was a Messerschmitt pilot who jumped a B-17 that had been damaged over Germany and pulled up next to it and escorted it to the English Channel. And the two pilots meet, and they find each other. How the hell they find each other is amazing. But these crazy stories that happen in combat. And there's a picture that I saw on the internet of the German fighter pilot who did not shoot down this B-17, and the crew of the B-17, along with all of their offspring, who would never have been alive were it not for this German fighter pilot. And so just a crazy story. I'll ask Mike later on today what the title of the book is. But this story, I don't know. It was in the last year. But there's a ship named after him now. So thoughts and prayers to the family of Medal of Honor recipient Thomas Hudner, who passed away at the age of 93 in Boston, crash-landed his plane after he saw his wingman shot down and unable to extract himself from his own airplane. So he crash-lands his, gets out, and they couldn't extract Jesse Brown, Ensign Jesse Brown, from his aircraft, and he died there. And then a helicopter came and rescued Hudner. But it's an absolutely incredible story. Look it up if you want to do a little bit of reading. Pentagon's considering stopping stateside schools for military children. You know what? And matter of convenience. But again, would it be such a bad thing? Is that something that the old DOD did and current parents? I'd be curious to hear more about the issue. If you didn't if you didn't hear the news from late last week, Gunnery Sergeant Joseph Felix was reduced to the rank of E1, received a dishonorable discharge, and faces 10 years in the brig for his conviction in what's described as the hazing scandal at Parris Island. The next person that will go on trial will be the battalion commander. So more of that. The again, just a kind of journalism, kind of interesting little tidbit that continues to run. The story about General Amos and undue command influence is in the news. But the headline of it is this: Marine who pissed on dead, pissed in a headline. What? Yeah. Marine pissed on dead, but in the article it doesn't use the word pissed; it uses the word urinated. So anyway, just interesting. Wednesday, battle in court, talking about the right of due process was violated by General Amos, and then as I said, there's an article inside there that talks about the undue command influence investigation that was released to the public. And so, pretty interesting reading there. So those are Marine Corps headlines. We'll real quick check the early bird, and then John Ubaldi is going to join us. And we're going to talk about the sorry state of the DOD. The number one story in the early bird is from the Atlantic: secret correspondence between Donald Trump Jr. and WikiLeaks. The Transparency Organization asked the president's son for his cooperation in sharing its work in contesting the results of the election and in arranging for Julian Assange to be Australia's ambassador to the United States. You know, again, all of this I think is good for the country. This is the gong show of how your nation elects a president. And I honestly, things need to change. Money trumps everything, no pun intended. Money trumps everything, and there's got to be a way that elections get returned to the voters and not this ridiculous cavalcade of stupidity that we see on a daily basis. Amazing. On the heels of a discussion about the UAE entering into discussions with the United States about buying the F-38, the UAE has announced that it's negotiating the purchase of Apache helicopters. Yeah, the UAE is is they're arming up. So I'm not sure what anybody sees in the future for the UAE, but if you come, you better bring more than a switchblade. The BBC, next headline, Rocket's Dirty Secret, number 3. The BBC has uncovered details of a secret deal that let hundreds of Islamic State fighters and their families escape from Raqqa under the gaze of the U.S. and British-led coalition who controlled the city. A convoy included some of the Islamic State's most notorious members, and despite reassurances, dozens of foreign fighters. Some of those have spread across Syria, even making it as far as Turkey. Anyway, so that's in the early bird this morning. Number 4 is that the Trump administration may stop running stateside schools for military children. It's part of a broader push to cut costs and reduce the size of the federal workforce. But you know what? I don't know that I would have a problem with that, but I think there has to be some kind of litmus test. So our kids would get on the bus and they would ride how far? Farther than 15, 20 minutes? I got a problem with that. Okay. My kids should not have to spend all day, a lot of time on a bus simply because I'm on active duty. However, you know, there's always been issues, if you talk to parents, with DOD schools. And so one of the first things parents will tell you when they move, they inquire immediately about the quality of the school on base. If not, they opt to send their kids off school, off base. So it's not an issue that won't resonate with people. And then this is kind of an ongoing issue that needs to get sorted out. This is from the Asian Review. South Korea rejected Japanese involvement in joint U.S. military drills. Yeah. The Trump administration's plan to show a united front against North Korea in the Sea of Japan took a step back this week as South Korea rejected a proposal to conduct a trilateral military exercise that would have included participation from Japan. Instead, the U.S. and South Korean Navy began a 4-day bilateral military exercise on Saturday. While the proposal was welcomed in Tokyo, the South Korean government refused to accept Japanese participation, citing public sentiment along with other reasons. So, you know, it's honestly amazing. So you're facing nukes, and we're still not over World War II. Okay. Boys, we got to sit down and make peace with this stuff, okay? I don't know who needs to say I'm sorry, but there's larger fish to fry. Okay, there's larger fish to fry on the planet than your historical animosity. So we got to get beyond that. All right, some Marine Corps headlines that maybe we haven't covered. Chris Wade, who we talk about with Mike Musselman. He's a very interesting guy. He's a very interesting guy. He's a gunner for the 2nd Marine Division, and he makes videos. Pretty dry sense of humor. There's an article about him in Task and Purpose about what it means to wear the bursting bomb, or the pineapple, as Mike would say. Mike would say that sarcastically, too. He wouldn't say it seriously. Okay, that's a look at the news. There's some other pretty interesting stories that are in there. But I would tell you, if you have a chance, the guy's name is Thomas Hudner. Check that out. That article, or check that name out, Hudner. Just type in Navy Korean War. And you'll get his story, which is an absolutely amazing story. So, we'll take a break. You stand by. Ubaldi's going to join us. We're going to talk about the demise of your Department of Defense, and we'll get his thoughts on it. So, good Tuesday morning to you. Almarin Radio on the air. Bob Nielsen's going to join us right after a big explosion. Don't touch that dial.
Whoa! All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Hey, let me pile on to that in a live way. If you know somebody who's looking for a job, and whether they've transitioned from the military recently or not is irrelevant. Turner Construction is a vet-friendly place. So if you know people that, you know, have backgrounds in logistics, in operations, right, in admin, that have led, tell them about Turner Construction and tell them to shoot me an email. I'll get it to Nielsen and Nielsen. But we're talking about careers. And you may not have ever thought of working in the construction business, but they do all that stuff, right? They work with a lot of crews led by young people. They supervise them. They supply them. They coordinate with them. What does that sound like? Exactly. All right, let me get out of the way.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of Allmarine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Where the sidewalk ends and the road begins, we said goodbye on a cold dark night. I'm not afraid to go. Sidewalk is, you left a lot. Some people leave and
7:45 here on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you. I'm joined by the owner, author, and perpetrator of the Ubaldi reports. It's not the Ubaldi report, so is it? I always say that.
No, it's the Ubaldi reports. This is the Ubaldi reports.
Ubaldi reports. I think it should be the Ubaldi report.
Well, on the website it says the Ubaldi reports, but then when I talk, I just go to Ubaldi reports, and it'll come up.
All right, all right. So if you Google Ubaldi, U-B-A-L-D-I reports, you'll find it. All right. Now, John Ubaldi, retired Marine Corps, Master Gunnery Sergeant, 0369 type, and from 0311. A question just popped into my mind. Were you a fan of the 9900 concept, taking anybody who became a first sergeant and sergeant major and sending them to whatever MOS? Were you a fan of that?
Because originally I wanted to be a first sergeant, and I got passed over twice. And then with 9/11, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that. I think there's certain skill sets that a first sergeant needs to have. And I think those who spent more time in the operational world had a better chance to be more successful if they stayed into that operational world going as Master Sergeant and Master Gunnery Sergeant than they would have gotten. I've seen others who went the other direction, and I knew one First Sergeant in particular. He was a phenomenal Marine when you're out in the dirt, but he just was not the administrator that a company commander needed in his First Sergeant. He didn't like admin, didn't like any of that stuff. And that was just the wrong fit for him.
Okay, but let me narrow down my question. My question would be, the fact that a First Sergeant that has spent his entire career as an artilleryman now goes to an aviation maintenance squadron, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Marine Corps? I think it's a bad thing. My experience as a second lieutenant, we got a guy, so I'm a second lieutenant, 3rd Platoon, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, right? So we got a guy who was an aviation guy his whole life. And he shows up with his cami starched, and he had mop and glow on his boots, and it all cracked and stuff. And you look at him, you're like, who is this guy, man? What is going on here? He didn't understand our culture. I felt bad for him, because even as a novice, I realized how uncomfortable he was with it. So,
no, I would agree with you on that, is because when I was in the infantry with 3-9 back in the day, we had a company sergeant who spent his entire career in the aviation wing. And when he was brought over to the infantry, he was just out of sorts. He wasn't used to that culture. It's a different culture. And I kind of, in some respects, the same thing would happen to the General Angus when he became commandant. Ooh. He was in the aviation wing his whole career, and now he's commandant of the Marine Corps.
Yeah, but he's supposed to be able to handle the whole thing. Rah.
Well, that's the thing with first sergeants and stuff, and I just think a lot of the problems, they just don't get that cultural mindset, especially in the infantry.
Well, that's no, I mean, and some would make the argument that Amos overreacted, certainly to the urination stuff. But others would say that he was one of the better commandants the Marine Corps had. I think that I don't know how history will judge him. And one thing, and we're going to talk about that today. Well, maybe not how history will judge him, but you know, the DOD has big issues it's dealing with. And so I wanted to, and we're going to talk about a few, but the overall trend is not a good trend line right now. When you think about, the Marine Corps' aviation issues make it, I don't want to say combat ineffective, but the thud that the Marine Corps ought to be able to deliver, it can't deliver, simply because it doesn't. Its aviation component is barely able, you know, to get to the fight. The majority, when you have 70% of your air platforms down, that is one astounding. You know, two, you know, merits investigation. How did we get here? So that's the Marine Corps. Okay. You have the Navy that is struggling with basic leadership. And when you don't think it could, get any worse, now you have this story about, you know, two SEALs possibly murdering a fellow special ops soldier because he discovered the fact that they were allegedly embezzling money from a witness fund that they had access to. Now, none of that has been charged out, so I guess we'll all wait to hear. But when you think it's really bad, I guess we're all naive to think it can't get worse. So that going on. You have the Army lowering mental health standards for recruits in some areas. So I wanted to have you on and talk about that kind of stuff, overall trends of the DOD. Give me a general thought before I start asking you specific questions. Am I reading too much into it? Is the DOD doing great?
No, the DOD has major systematic problems, and it's not, I know we're Marines, and we want to think the Marine Corps is better than everybody else, but the Marine Corps is facing problems just like the other branches are. And I just think, but I also think it's a two-pronged attack, is that we don't have leaders that are leading like when we came in. And I hate to use that analogy, it was better when we came in the Marine Corps, but it was different. The culture was different. And then the second phase of it is we've got a society that is alienated from those who serve. And this was my article I'm writing this week, and I sent it to my editor. Hopefully it gets published the next couple days. But this is what we've got. We've got a society that is so far removed from military service. Now, we spoke earlier, and your son is coming back from deployment. Well, you know what that means, but most of Americans don't. They don't have a son or a daughter or a cousin. They don't have a connection to the military, and that's where the military gets pushed on, all these social engineering, you can't do this. And we talked about this last night, about Field Day was a huge deal. Now it's become barracks cleaning, and it's not the same as it once was. And that leads to a lot of these problems.
And okay, so that's the social piece of I want to talk about that. Well, let's talk about the social piece. Are Marines different now?
You want to say no, but you have to say yes. We're facing serious.
I disagree. Here's what I say. So, look, Marines have been coming to the Marine Corps for a long time, okay? 242
Correct.
Years, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. I mean, our culture has gone through similar shifts of tectonic plates. I mean, do you think it was a moderate shift in what came into the Marine Corps and the things they said when radio went into every home in the country and every kid was doing their either Milton Berle impersonation or W.C. Fields impersonation? I don't even know, but whatever the programming was, you know, I mean, that had to rock the culture. And then how about when rock and roll started, Elvis Presley swinging his hips and all that?
Right.
You know, growing his hair long. Now we get into the 60s, television into every home, right? All these punks wearing their hair long, right? Blah, 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 blah. So that leads you through the 60s and into the craziness of the 70s and all that. You know, the president gets impeached, the Vietnam War, right? And so that had to be a huge challenge culturally. I mean, the 60s, were an incredible challenge for the Marine Corps. As an institution, then you know I guess fast forward to the 80s or to the early 90s, the advent of the internet, right? And now that changes again, and now cell phones. So I don't see this. I don't see young Marines today as a whole. Honestly, I don't see them any different. They are different in the exact same way that Marines have always been different. In the ways our wars are all different.
Well, you're correct on that. Is Bruce Kulak, the former FNF PAC commander and the father of General Kulak, became commandant. He wrote a book in the mid-60s called The First to Fight. He goes, the Marines
right.
that fought in Guadalcanal and the same who went into Chosin to Khe Sanh up into the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. And what you alluded to, there were systematic changes, a shift. Where you had, you know, when radio came in, that changed things. Television, now we're into the internet age. But the problem or the difference is between the generation today and the generation that came of age during those periods you mentioned. It's like when I went to school, there was one kid that I remember came from a divorced family. Now today, it's a misnomer or you're the minority if you come from a two-parent family. In each of those cases that you mentioned, there was strong family connection. And this is not just from the military standpoint. Go into the civilian world. There was a statistic that came out. If a baby is born to a woman under the age of 30, typically that's going to be in the single-parent family, not the result of a divorce. And these are where you learn. I mean, my parents weren't exactly perfect. My dad only had a fifth grade education. My mom just was a high school graduate. But they taught us values that helped me when I became an adult. My dad was like, life isn't easy. It's dark and bleak. And my mom balanced it out, hey, you can do what you want, you can be what you want. But my dad wanted to make sure that we understood that it's a rough life out there. But too many kids, and I faced this when we were in the Marines, especially at NHD where we were there, almost all these guys and gals came from despicable families. If they even knew their fathers or mothers.
Translated into the Marine Corps. But again, is that a bigger change than the kids who walked into the Marine Corps in the 60s with long hair and the whole hippie thing going on in their culture?
It was different. They came in with that counterculture that's refused with the our elders who fought World War II went through, but they still came out of that or went into that period, coming from two-parent families was the norm. Two-parent families today is not the norm. It's the exception. If you're not grounded by some type of role model when you're a child, I mean, majority of the time when I first came in the Marine Corps and I first became a staff NCO and how to do, you know, council troops and everything, family issues was not my top, one of the top concerns.
Right.
When I got back on active duty in 2011, and MHG, I was like, might as well have been a counselor. I had to deal with everybody from mental health to someone who's a cutter. There was one Marine who was, you know, one of our female Marines was sexually assaulted. I had to deal with that issue. There was just challenges that I didn't have to deal with maybe 15, 20 years before.
Yeah, but again, that was a special group, though. Okay, those were all.
That was a special group.
Those were all damaged Marines that were put in the S3 section of a non-deploying unit, so that they could their cases either going to Wounded Warrior or being discharged could be adjudicated without impacting on an operational unit. So you were So you were part of that.
That was the case. That was the case. That was a very special unit. You're absolutely correct. But when I had to go to GPAC or all the other units, I know you look at the Marines and they're married or they're divorced or they have children. When I was in the infantry, there was one Marine who was married. Everybody else wasn't. So you didn't have to deal with family dynamics. Now you spend a lot more time dealing with family dynamic issues that you didn't have to deal with 20 years, 30 years ago. Even the Marine Corps loosened up the standards. I was stunned in 2001 how sergeants who were single were living out in town. Well, that was unheard of. Unless you were married, you stayed in the barracks.
Okay, so let me read you an email. Mac, this is an interesting discussion because parts of me agree with both of you. One, I believe change is constant on the planet, in the world, and the only change that we haven't seen is the end of change. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
Also, though, I believe that there's been social changes that have rocked our culture that Master Guns is outlining, and I think they're legitimate because I think young people come to the Marine Corps a little bit different these days because of the divorce rate and because of the way our culture is. And we have to adjust a little bit because of that. So he's saying we're both right. You know, again, so what does that mean? Here's my problem with all of this. I don't think you can change yourself that much in terms of what you are to accommodate people. They change to accommodate you. Quote unquote, the change is forever. Okay? But yet, we don't field day anymore. My room's not inspected anymore. I can go online and say whatever I want. Well, that makes you kind of a civilian that just happens to go to work every day as a Marine. doesn't make you a Marine. And so to me, I think the problem in a lot of different organizations is not the young people. The problem is the leadership of the organization is afraid to stick to its guns and demand things of them.
No, but that's a good point, though. I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I mentioned this last night, is look at the tattoo policy in the Marine Corps. When I came in 82, it was always known, do not get a tattoo below the shirt sleeve of your Charlie shirt. And then somewhere in the late 90s, early 2000s, it's like, what is every jump ship from the circus? I mean, when was the sleeve tattoo ever appropriate in the Marine Corps?
Never was.
But that was allowed to go. And then there was the current Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. He was like, well, I don't have a tattoo, but I can kind of... He was making allowances for that type of... No, that should never happen.
Yeah, but... okay, so the argument for that... And so to me, you know, it becomes all these different small movements. You know what? Again... Let me play devil's advocate. Why do I need to care about how much ink he's got on his arm? As long as there's nothing that's blatantly disrespectful, that somehow or other, look, you can't come in here with F the president or something tattooed on your arm. We can't have that. Sorry about that. You go do something else. But short of that, why do I care? It used to be only sailors, okay? Only sailors and bikers got tattoos, okay?
Correct.
Now, the probability that of the next 10 women you date, because I know you're single, the next 10 women you date, 6 of them will have tattoos of some sort. And we're talking...
Yeah, they do.
We're talking middle-class, mainstream women, not men. We're not talking sailors and bikers. Okay, so the culture changed. Is that a significant move for the Marine Corps? I don't think so. But it's different.
I would grant you, the
divorce thing is significant because they come to you, you know, with different... But we've always faced that challenge. The Marine Corps has always been the land... Right, of damaged children, okay?
Well, it's always been the land of damaged children. I got that. The only reason I'm going the birds back to the tattoo part, it was just, it's attention to detail. You're not an individual anymore. Now you are part of the Marine Corps. So if the Marine Corps indirect policy was, you will not get a tattoo, period, below... The shirt sleeve. I remember when I was on barracks duty on Guam, one of the Marines came in with something on his forearms, and man, he got ridiculed for that. He's like, who the hell do you think you are? You will not get a tattoo below the frickin' shirt sleeve. And that set the tone for all the other things. You knew you come in, there was a certain standard that you had to meet. Who cares how you looked at in the civilian, but that standard was it. And then we started to loosen up in the barracks. Well, now you can put, instead of your USMC green olive drab blanket, now you can put a comforter or conservative pictures on.
Or not.
A wall. Instead of waking up at 6 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning and see the tanks of the Warsaw Pact, now you can put something a little bit more amenable to what you want to do.
I'm sorry, my dog's barking.
No, that's...
My son might be home, so I'm not sure. So at what point does it become significant, I guess is the question. So you make all these small adjustments. What's significant? You know, I don't know the tattoo policy is significant. I do know that I do believe that not inspecting is significant.
Sure.
Because now you can just backslide to be your own slimy self.
No, exactly. I mean, it's all these little things kind of add up to the big things, and that's where the attention to detail comes.
Okay,
in.
So how do we differentiate how do we separate brass from links? What is a significant deviation, and what is insignificant? How do we define that? Because again, I would say You know, the Marine Corps has always dealt with damaged people. You know, you can go to jail, you can join the Marine Corps. Now, that doesn't happen so much anymore, but for a lot of years, it did.
No, it did. That was a common thing. I know
right.
A couple of Marines I knew when I first came in were either jail or the Marine Corps.
Right.
Pick a branch.
Right. And so, and some of them came to the Marine Corps and did well. Some of them came to the Marine Corps and went to jail again, you know, before they got booted out. So, it's so again, if you look at the trend line, to me, what I see is we don't hold, for instance, the Navy, you know, you can go to sea without being qualified on the bridge. You can go to sea without being qualified, your navigator, without being qualified. Okay, but God forbid you go to sea and your crew doesn't have its sexual harassment training done. And so to me, there's all these, you know, accommodations made. And pretty soon you look and you like, well, how do I'm trying to understand this, but I can't understand it. And then these standards begin to erode. I will tell you, though, in my opinion, the SEAL community is a community that's screaming for help. That's absolutely screaming. The SEALs don't do anything that you don't see on the news these days. Anything. I mean, do they all go someplace with their publicist? Right? And now, and again, and I'll ask you a question, and then we got to take a break. Here's a question. So, in this investigation, when you first saw it, where these alleged these SEALs may have strangled a soldier when he found out that they were stealing from money intended to pay informants. What do you think the Navy's Inspector General will find if it starts going through those bank accounts all over the world? Do you think they're going to – so I'll ask you a yes or no question. I won't put you too much on the spot. Do you think that they're going to find that that was an absolute anomaly, that it's never happened before in the history of the Navy?
Oh, hell no. They're going to find it was a common occurrence.
Okay. Okay, so to me, you have a community – the SEAL community that I believe that is screaming for help. Okay, and so you begin to put these trend lines together, and it doesn't tell a good story about the Department of Defense. And you could throw the Marines United thing in there. You can throw the next topic, which is I want to get your reaction to what happened at Parris Island from an enlisted guy's perspective. You know, that guy gets 10 years in prison. You know, you look at these trend lines, and these are major leadership failures in all of our services, in all of our services. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. John Ubaldi, my guest. We're talking about trend lines in the DOD this morning. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoffoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Age 16 on a Tuesday. Patrick just walked through the door, so welcome home to him. Johnny Baldy continues with us. And we're talking about trend lines. All right. So we've been talking about how jacked up the DOD is. Let's talk about Parris Island. You're an 03. Former O-369, a recruit dies, and right now the only guy going to jail is his drill instructor. Fair, not fair? Your thoughts on that?
No, it's fair from what the article, and without having seen the full report, but, I mean, what the drill instructor did, I mean, one of the charges against him, he put a recruit in a dryer and turned it on spin. Well, what the heck is that acceptable?
Come on. I always thought that was funny when it's being done as a joke. It's not like you never heard anybody having that done to him. I always thought that was kind of funny.
But when you're a drill instructor at recruit training, when is all that acceptable? There was a standard, they read this standard of all drill instructors, and they didn't say what period it was, and they said this is what a drill instructor should or should not do. And it was based out of the late 60s, early 70s, and it's relevant to today. And this goes back to the leadership part. There were other drill instructors around. It can't say that he did this all by himself.
That's the most disturbing part. Let me give you two thoughts and tell me what you think. I had Barney Barnum on, who's a Medal of Honor recipient in Vietnam. It's an awesome story too. He's an artillery guy. He's at barracks duty at Pearl Harbor in 1966, I think. And it's clear that Vietnam, most of the Marines on barracks duty are infantry Marines. They're going to Vietnam. So the staff NCOs and officers go to the head of the barracks. And I don't know who that was, but they said, hey, can we go to FMF PAC and rig a drug deal where, you know, we can rotate over TAD for, you know, 60, 90 days. You know, learn what's going on and come back and teach classes. And he gives his approval. They execute the drug deal. And Barnum is a first lieutenant. He says, you know, I'm not married. Why I should be one of the first guys to go. And hold on. I've got a dog fight going on in here. Hey, get out of here. Yeah. Sorry. I never said I was a professional. So my dogs do this thing that's crazy. They chase each other, and then they fight like Mufasa and Scar do at the end of The Lion King. You know, like they stand up and they do this fight thing, and I've got that going on here. So anyway, so he goes to Vietnam, and they're doing a movement to contact, I want to say, with India Company 3-4, and they get hit by an NVA battalion, and the first rounds kill the company commander. He takes over the company and fights the company as a senior lieutenant, and he's awarded for his actions the next day. That day and the next, he's awarded the Medal of Honor, and so he says, "Hey, I asked him about hazing. He says there's no place in the Marine Corps for hazing." And he said, look, you're talking to a guy who, look, he said, it's not like I'm any stranger to pinning. You know, it's not like I'm, you know, I haven't gone through the shellback ceremony or some of the chief's initiations that the Navy does. Correct. He said, but look, there's a difference between those initiations and hazing. And when the element of getting even, when it's done to be mean, that was never the intention of any of those rituals, any of those initiations. They were all designed to be funny. And I thought, you know what? That's true. He said, look, Marines treating other Marines badly, that's never acceptable. And only the stupid do that kind of stuff. And he said, in all the stuff that I ever saw, and again, Master Guns and I come from, I tell the story, the first time I saw a blood stripe being done wasn't that I walked around the corner in a barracks and saw it. Okay, it was done on the grinder after the formation in front of God and everybody.
It was open. Everything was done open.
Yeah, it was, you know, and so it wasn't, you know, it was, and there's staff NCOs standing around. And so to me, the policing and all that was, you didn't see somebody trying to hurt somebody, because they would have got their head jacked up by one of the staff NCOs that was standing there, all right? I mean, and so I don't know. That's pretty brutal, but it was good natured. It was the initiation. It wasn't trying to hurt somebody. It wasn't trying to demean somebody. And so here's my point that Barnum made very well. He said, "Look, Marines don't haze." Do we have initiations? Yeah, we do. And they tend to be fun. He asked me at one point, we were off there. He said, hey, did you have a good time during the day you became a shellback? I said, it was hilarious. He said, yeah. He said, when this stuff became mean and cruel, he said, is when something went wrong in the Marine Corps. And he said, maybe it now all happens behind closed doors where it used to happen in front of sergeants and staff sergeants who controlled it. He said, maybe that's the case. But treating another Marine poorly, throwing their clothes off the third floor, you know, because you found them in the dryer and they're a boot, he goes, that's garbage. He said it has no place in the Marine Corps. So with that said, you know, in the context that I ever, you know, heard it, it wasn't a drill instructor calling a recruit a terrorist who happens to be a Muslim when we're at war with Muslim fundamentalism, right? That's a bit different. And making him, you know, tying him up with a belt and making him simulate slitting the throat of another Marine and calling him a terrorist while he does it, that's crazy stuff. Putting him in a dryer and turning it on repeatedly till he tells you he's not a Muslim, that's crazy stuff, okay? And so to me, what I always heard, the way I saw it done was the stuff was funny. Putting somebody into a dryer and turning the dryer on because they were soaking wet. Hey, come here, glasses. I'll dry you off. Staff Sergeant, get in the dryer. What? Get in the dryer now, and you turn it on, and he rolls over one time, you open the door, and he gets out, and everybody's laughing. That's funny, okay? That's funny. And so the person that you do it to, it's not the person that's ostracized, because you don't want to do it to that guy, but you want to do it to somebody who can take it, somebody who's one of the favorites. And so he just laughs, and it's a funny story, right? It's much different than doing that to weak Marines in a way to ostracize them. So I'm just curious your thoughts. As this thing comes down, does it piss you off that only the gunny's going to be held responsible? What about the regimental commander? What about the battalion commander? What about the battalion sergeant major? What about the rest of those guys?
But see, that's on a lot of these things. It's always the enlisted are the ones who get punished. But everybody else knew about it, below that rank and above that rank. You can't just tell me this happened in a vacuum. Everybody was part of that. And when you allow that culture to breed, it festers out. And it's just poor leadership on all phases. And you got a Medal of Honor recipient saying there's no place in the Marine Corps for hazing another Marine like that. There's something wrong. He's absolutely correct. There is no place. All the other stuff, the pinning on, that was done in an open forum. That was never allowed to be done behind closed doors at all. And this is where these problems between the hazing on this, the sexual harassment, all these other things, it just pisses me off that this is where the Marine Corps has gone. We're better than that.
Yeah, but again, if I was a staff NCO, one of the things I'd be pissed about was, wait a minute, why does everybody else skate? And just that guy, he's going to pay. What about the whole saying, everything your unit does or fails to do? Does that apply? Oh, it does until we go to court-martial or until we hand out punishment, then it doesn't apply. And let me tell you the other thing he said that was interesting. He said, let me tell you why this kind of stuff didn't happen when you have good units down there. You want to know why? He said, because they get out and they know people. He said, I don't mean they're walking around trying to catch people. He said, although there is that an element for the criminals about that. But here's what they do. They get to know everybody. They know Gunny this. They know First Sergeant that. They know Staff Sergeant this. They know about them. And they talk to them. And they listen to their problems. Okay, and when you have that kind of engaged leadership and you feel a part of it, this stuff doesn't go on.
It doesn't.
And he said, so what I'll tell you is the leaders of that organization are not out and amongst them, because if they are, this stuff doesn't happen. And so to me, but those guys aren't getting punished so far.
And that's the problem on everything. I've seen that. Even when last time I was on active duty, a junior Marine has a PTSD, they're ready to court-martial his ass But there was an officer who had PTSD, did something nefarious, and he used the PTSD to get off, and he did. He just gets a letter of reprimand, and he gets his honorable discharge. Well, the enlisted gets the other kind of discharge that's not favorable to him. So it's that kind of double standard. But, I mean, I go back to when I first in the Marine Corps, when I got promoted to Lance Corporal, the regimental commander sent in a letter to my parents commending me for being promoted to Lance Corporal. He took the time out to know who the hell I was. And I was stunned that a full-bird colonel would know who the heck I was. Like that. But they knew us. We knew everything about each other. Where you went to, where you grew up, something about your family. All these things. They knew everything about you. And you didn't have these kind of problems like we do now. And that's just a lack of leadership. All up and down the food chain.
All right, let me ask this relative to Parris Island. Do you think anybody above that gunny, the battalion commander is going to go on, going to be court-martialed, so we'll put him aside. Do you think anybody else will be punished because of this? The regimental commander was given immunity from prosecution. I believe the regimental sergeant major, too, although both were relieved. Is that enough? Is that enough message sending by the Marine Corps?
No, because it just shows the one person directly involved, he gets punished, he gets skewered. Everybody else, yeah, they get relieved, they'll retire, and they still go on their merry little way, but it just sends the message, you get it, but everybody else who knew about it gets away with it. And it doesn't solve the problem.
Okay, so
leaders are supposed to be held accountable for their decisions. You're in charge.
Okay.
You're supposed to lead the lead.
Okay. If you were queen for a day, and what kind of message should be sent to the Marine Corps in this case, and who should be punished in order to send the right message?
Well, obviously the perpetrator of the act should be punished. Then you got to find out if anybody knew about it. They also should be punished as an accessory. You knew about it and you didn't stop it.
Right. And so the battalion commander, evidently, this gunnery sergeant had other accusations about abusing recruits. Those investigations were not resolved when he got put back into this series, is my understanding on one of the charges. So
that's the understanding I got.
Okay, so what's appropriate for the lieutenant colonel then?
Well, he has to be accountable. Why did you put that gunnery sergeant back with recruits when he had a charge pending of abusing recruits? Even though it may not have gone through the whole adjudication process, you had a charge that he was abusing recruits. Why did you put him back? He needs to answer that question.
Okay, so to me, his answer doesn't matter. The bottom line is you're responsible for everything you do and fail to do.
Exactly.
There is no answer that you can give, and I'll be the convening, I'll be the presiding officer. There is no answer that you can give me that justifies putting him back in there short of the resolution of those cases. There's a reason those rules are in place.
There is a reason for that. You're right. There's no reason he can give you to say you had charges against them. They're still being resolved. There's no reason you can say, well, I needed it. No. They had charges against him abusing recruits. You don't put them back into the mix again.
And the reason that those rules are there is because we've gone down this road before. There isn't one lesson that we're going to learn out of this that we have not already learned.
Correct.
Okay. All you've done, by your negligence in command, is been party to the death of a recruit through lessons that we've already learned, and you're going to pay. What's an appropriate punishment for a guy like so? What's the message that has to get sent? And to me, the message that has to get sent is not. He pled guilty and was allowed to retire. If you want to, and again, and I say the same thing, senior enlisted somebody, he should be court-martialed as well.
Correct.
Okay? And so to me, them pleading guilty and just it, what needs to happen is eyebrows around the Marine Corps have to get raised to the point of, what? Holy shit. Well, then I better get my ass out from behind this desk and all these computer reports and whatever I'm looking at here in my computer that takes me all day. And I better get out and I better execute the sixth step in troop leading. I better know what's going on. And so I think there's more work to be done at Parris Island than simply Gunnery Sergeant Felix. That's my own opinion. But again, I would
agree with you. More work needs to be done, not just at Parris Island. Other commands need to look at this. What are we doing? Are we doing those basic troop leading procedures that we're always taught, but are we doing that?
Well, and so to me, that's why, and I don't know if it's time in the brig, I don't know if it's reduction in rank that you tend not to see for officers, but, you know, to use a baseball phrase, you know, the judge in this case, in my opinion, needs to throw up and in on this battalion commander so that everybody in the Marine Corps that's in a position of leadership sees that and says, whoa, I probably ought to get out and about a little bit more then.
Well, right. They do. And that's the thing. And you're right. They need to hold everybody accountable.
And I say the same thing ought to happen with the sergeant major. You're more than you're more than an advisor, because to me, the guy who should have come to the battalion commander and said, "Hey, sir, we need to keep a close eye on this," is the guy, that senior enlisted guy, who can tap into all those guys anytime he wants. And if he doesn't know about it, then you got a problem, because he ought to be talking to him. He ought to know, and he ought to know the people that you ought to have to keep track of.
And that's why you need a senior enlisted, like a good sergeant major, good staff NCO, because the officers can't see everything and they're in a different realm. We're down there with the Marines. That's where you get it. You get to know your Marine. And you see the problems they're going through and prevent, if it gets up to your level, then something went wrong.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I mean, there is a certain level of squelch that officers exist above. And so if something doesn't break squelch, it can be a topic below squelch, and that is where the enlisted community lives. And you would expect senior enlisted guys to be knowing that, and that when something approaches squelch, what you want from your enlisted guys is to walk in before it breaks squelch and say, "Hey, sir, we need to have a little talk. We've got a problem." And you have some kind of proactive solution. But again, if senior enlisted guys don't get held accountable, then you're failing in message sending in these events. And so anyway, all right, next question. One more question and then we got to take a break. The Army's adjusting mental health criteria for enlistees. Is that a good idea or a bad idea? McNamara's 100,000 in Vietnam was designed to bring in using the military as an upward mobility tool, was designed to bring in lower category mental health scores. And the ultimately much of the drug use and the racism that was prevalent in the military in the 70s, a lot of people would lay it at the fact that the military took these kinds of mental categories in. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, before I came on, I read an article about it from Army Times. The Army clarified that USA Today report that came out, I believe, yesterday. If there's a waiver given, it has to be approved by the Department of the Army. they're dropping it from the Department of Army to their Department of Army's recruiting command that makes that determination, that arbitrator of that. And one of the comments was made that we don't want somebody that maybe went to our counseling when they were 10 barred from joining the Army. But the problem with that is there can be so many problems or abuse of that. And some of the things they're talking about is those with bipolar issues, those who had drug and alcohol problems. We don't want them to get a waiver to come in or drop that standard. Now, they say they're not, but we've seen that in the past. That is a very disturbing trend when you take it from here to drop it to here and allow somebody who, because I remember when I was at NHG, we had one Marine, a corporal, who had, and I did research on it, he never should have been in the Marine Corps because he had some mental health issues that was he was given waivers for, and he was allowed to come in. And that caused him problems later on. And I just think that's a mistake for the Army to do that.
But that seems to be driven by numbers and ability to hit numbers relative to recruiting. And so we're going to now look at the ebb and flow of different mental categories that has happened historically in the nation's history.
Well, it is, but it also goes back to what we stated earlier at the beginning of the program, when we talked about it at great length yesterday, is the Army, you know, making their adjustments, but we're also seeing a segment of society who doesn't look at the military as a valuable option. I mean, we had Veterans Day last weekend or last Saturday, and everybody thanks the veterans, thank you for your service and everything. But how many people would want their child to join the military? I don't know if you remember. I think it was at the before the war started and before 9/11, there was a professor at a prep school. His son, out of the blue, decides to join the Marine Corps. And everybody was like aghast. How can we do this? We got to look at our curriculum. Well, the father goes to Parris Island for his recruit training, or at least his graduation. And he looks around, and these are all just blue-collar, middle-class families. So when he goes back to the school, he noticed we say to the janitor or to the maintenance worker, oh, that's so great that your son's joining, but not my son. And if you ever get a chance to read Baghdad at Sunrise by Colonel Peter Mansour, who now teaches military history at Ohio State, at the end of his book, he went to a function up in upstate New York, and the hostess' son were really big on military history. And he made the comment, well, if you like the military so much, why don't you think about going to West Point? His mom puts his arm around him. Oh, no, 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 no. He's got more important things to do. We appreciate the service that you're doing and what you're going, but my son has things he needs to do. When we have that attitude that that's great for someone else's kid, but not for mine,
right,
then you understand why we got the problems we're getting right now.
Well, I don't know. I go back to we say everything your unit does and fails to do, right?
Correct.
Do we hold people to that?
No, sometimes we don't. We do not do that.
No. No, again, I think institutionally we suffer because we're not maintaining standards. They'll give us what
we're
we
not.
Want. They'll give us what we want. We've got to lead better. So I don't see it as an entry level problem in the Marine Corps. I see what we have is a mid-grade and higher problem in the Marine Corps that comes off standards too easy. We have certain standards that have been around the Marine Corps a long time. Okay? We need to lead better, right? And we need to stick to them. And we've both seen them in combat. They're incredible. Young people in this country are incredible. Okay? Are we leading them right? Are we doing the things that we're supposed to be doing? You know, that's the question. And the more we move away from embracing discipline, more discipline, not less, the harder we make that for young people. The more confusing and the harder we make it. I thought Barnum's explanation was awesome in that, hey, right, we don't haze. Right? Those initiations that you've heard about, they didn't involve, you know, destruction of somebody's personal property. They didn't involve that. They were things that we did, and we did as a unit, and they were funny. When it gets mean-spirited and people are settling grudges and things like that, that's when the leaders step in and put an end to that. So now here's the question. Where are the leaders?
And that's it. Where are
Thank
the
you.
Leaders?
Thank you. Because, again, hazing, is it a problem or the symptom of a problem? I'd argue it's a symptom of a problem. What is the problem? The problem is leadership of the sergeant and the staff sergeant level. Those are the ones who lay the wood. Corporal, kind of a novice at leadership. You know, the atypical one grabs it right away. But most of them are, you know, they struggle with their new role. I used to just be trying to get out of the working party 2 weeks ago. Now I'm in charge of supervising it. Yeah, how exactly does that work, you know? And what do I say when guys say, hey, I'm going to PX, I'm out, you know? They're my buddies. Not easy. Okay, so corporals, novices, okay? I know they're supposed to be blah, 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 blah. But sergeants, you should figure it out by then. Staff sergeant, you got to be an enforcer in the Marine Corps. And so, I don't know, when I look at the standards that we hold, the people that are supposed to do it. And again, what are we talking about? Basic accountability, right? You're going to be here with this gear at this time. Do that. Right? So, I don't know. I don't know. The trend line in the DOD is not a good one. Is not a good one. Here's a couple emails for you. Mac, the SEAL thing is very disturbing. I hope what I'm reading isn't true, but given the way the article I read was sourced, it seems to be there's multiple sources in this, and they're all pretty much saying the same thing, which is not good. I concur with you. When you see this behavior once, I'm sure they didn't invent this little trick. I'm sure this has been a dirty little secret in not only the SEAL community, but the SOF community for a long, long time. If the IG does stick their nose in it, and starts poking around to see how much money was dispensed to who, good luck on that deal. Here's a question for you, though. Why does it never seem that Delta Force is in the news like the SEAL? Master Guns, got an answer?
That goes back to, you made a very good point when we were talking last night, is the pipeline. When you join the SEALs, you go from recruit training into SEALs. Well, when you go into Delta Force, you have to become an Army Ranger first, then you need to go become a Green Beret or Special Forces of some type, and then you move up. So you've been in the system a while, and you don't, and they're very, I never really dealt much with Navy SEALs, but on the Army Special Forces and Green Berets I have, they're very professional. And I think that's a big difference.
You're not so in the Army, you're not special from the start. You got to earn your way to get there.
You've got to earn it all the way up. You start in one like Army Ranger, then you move up to, you know, your Green Berets or other special forces that they have, and then you become going to Delta Force.
So you get there. I guess the bottom line is you get there by being a good soldier. Which is
correct
by being a professional and a good soldier. Whereas when you're a SEAL, you go in, I want to be a rock star. Now I am a rock star. The rules don't apply to me. I can do what I want. Whereas I think a little bit more seasoned, a little bit more professional in a pipeline that goes through Ranger to Delta.
And then the other aspect is the SEALs is almost like a separate entity from the regular Navy.
Right.
I'm like, okay, if you take like our Marine Raiders now, I guess they're called, right. They still have to do the same thing. They go in the infantry, then they apply, and then they move up. So they've been in the pipeline for a while before they get into that position. And I think the SEALs are different. They're almost isolated all down at Coronado,
right.
And then other bases out in the East Coast.
Little Creek.
Isolated from the mainstream regular Navy, which makes a difference.
Yeah, they don't have too much. They don't identify so much with the with the Black Shoe Navy or the Brown Shoe Navy. They are their own. And again, I think that all contributes to the rules don't apply to us mentality that you see in cases like this. And when the rules don't apply to you, then you have trouble. And I don't care if you're a 12-year-old or I don't care if you're a SEAL. I talk about my life being simple growing up. I went to Catholic school, right? I had nuns teach me. The rules at home were the same rules that were at school. So my life was simple. There was an expectation that I treat people well and that I achieve academically, right? And that didn't change whether I was at home. So my life was easy. I met kids, though, who I remember hearing them say, we don't have to do that. And I remember thinking, yes, we do. Like, and I'm like, no, we don't. Homework? I don't do my homework. And I thought, you don't do your homework. This is like, listen to me, Cherry Boy. You don't do your homework? No. Like, what are they going to do? You know, and then I cheat. You know, I always sit next to so-and-so during the test, and I cheat off him. I was like, you cheat on tests? So, because my life was simple. That was not in the world. And when those doors open up, that's when you see behavior begin to deviate from what's expected.
Yep.
Agreed. Interesting. Have you read the investigations into the McCain or the reports on the investigation?
I read part of it. On, I think, the latest one that happened, and it was very extremely disturbing.
How so?
On that report. Well, when you're at sea, as you know, and for anybody listening, you're at sea, you have all these safeguards, and with all the electronic and computerized systems that we have, and then the final layer is you have watch standards all across the ship, and no whistles are sounded. Nothing was done. It's like, who the heck is running the ships to kill those many sailors? To me, it was extremely disturbing from there.
What was the most disturbing part of what you read?
That there was no one sounded the alarm. I mean, with all the way from, with all the computer systems they have, they didn't sense anything coming. There was all these little safeguards until they finally got to the watch standards on the bridge, and no one signaled any alarm. I'm like, who the heck is many guys all asleep? You're in the busy, especially the one where there's Strait of, was it Malacca? I pronounced it right?
The Malaccan Strait. Well, you're in the busiest. In the Strait of Singapore, which feeds into the Malaccan Strait, but yeah, extremely. And most ships are at general quarters. When the McCain hits, a lot of times you'll go to a modified watch, which means you have other people augmenting the watch. They hadn't even gone to that yet, even though it had been recommended by the XO and the OPSO of the ship.
And that's disturbing. You're in the busiest area of the world for shipping traffic, and you're treating it like you're in the open ocean, and there's no warnings of any sort, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Now, luckily, they were trained at least in their damage control, saved both ships. I mean, that's a plus on them, but I hate to have you do that. I mean, where's all the other stuff? I've stand on bridge watch like that before. You see a ship, hey, we got a ship coming on our port or starboard side. This is the distance. Everybody knows. But I mean, it's extremely disturbing. And then our adversaries and allies see this. They're like, this is America. They're supposed to protect us. Oh, we don't have to worry about these guys. Look how they can't even navigate properly.
How does the Navy get out of that?
It goes back to how we started this program. This comes back to better training, effective training, and leadership. I mean, if you're the commanding officer, especially on a ship, you set the tone. you got to make sure your men and women on your ship are highly trained in all contingencies.
Okay,
the basic stuff.
I'll ask you another question, and then I'll let you go. I'm going to make you the CO of a destroyer, okay, or a frigate. I don't even know the difference between them, to be honest with you. I know a frigate's bigger than a destroyer, but I don't know. Like, what's the difference between a cruiser, a frigate, and a destroyer? Hell, I don't know. The cruiser's the biggest. I know that. The frigate's a little bit bigger. And I don't know. And the destroyer's like a little, you know, it's a little fast actor. So I need to have somebody on to explain the difference between the three to me. You're getting ready to go to sea. In the training days that you have available, you can either get your watch standards up to snuff, or you can get the crew completely qualified on sexual harassment, sexual assault training. But you're going to go to sea with something unchecked. As the CO of the ship in today's climate, and you know you want to see rank to the 06 level, which is captain in the Navy, which training do you think you ought to do?
Well, in hindsight, it's one I would do
here's what I'm asking. And this is before any of the collisions, right? In the current atmosphere in the Department of Defense, you sit down with your ops and he says, hey, sir, given our deployment date, given where we're at, all right, we have time to either get completely qualified in sexual assault, sexual harassment, or we have time to get completely qualified in navigation, bridge, CIC, watch standing, blah, 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 blah. In today's climate, you as a lieutenant colonel, which is a commander in the Navy, what do you choose so that you can get promoted?
In today's climate, it'd be the sexual harassment one.
Exactly. And that's no joke either. Okay, that stuff is so powerful. So I would tell you, it would take the atypical, and he would probably not be advanced, but he would be able to lay his pillow on his on bed at night, saying, "Hey, look, I'm not going to be able to do that before I go to sea. I know that's what you wanted, but I can't do that. My watch standards are going to be good though, and I will execute the sexual assault, sexual harassment training at sea. I can't do it in port." And he would have to be good with that. And that's not normally the case.
The one person I would like to ask,
yeah,
and I don't know if you could ever get him on your program, because I would listen to that program, is remember when Trump became president and then he selected General Mattis as the Secretary of Defense?
Yeah.
I would love to get his impact on a lot of these trends that we're seeing in all the different branches, because they all are going to go to his purview.
Which is a good thing.
I would like to see what is his reaction to all this, and what is his recommendations in today's climate that he has to deal with, because he has to go up in front of the Armed Senate and House Armed Services Committee and all this stuff.
Well, no, I would tell you, the good part for the DOD and the American people is that the two guys that will review this stuff are Joe Dunford and Jim Mattis. And you're not going to find better guys, better, you know, leaders in the Department of Defense than those two guys. And so,
most definitely.
Yeah, and so they're going to have to give this some kind of perspective. Is sexual harassment and a sexual assault training important? You know what? Absolutely, it is. Okay, is it more important than navigation and watch standing when you're getting ready to go to sea? I don't know that it is. Okay, but we've got to find some way to deal with both of them. And if you have to prioritize them, then this is my guidance. Okay? This is my guidance. So, interesting. Here's another email. It's typical. There's a parenthetical to start with. I'm retired enlisted. It is typical vintage Marine Corps justice that mid-level enlisted and junior officers will pay. You will rarely see anybody the rank of captain or higher be reduced in rank or go to the brig. rarely, if ever, in these kind of cases. Mid-level enlisted will pay, senior enlisted will skate. It's the way of the Marine Corps. It's been that way for a long time. I don't believe anything other than that will happen. But I agree with Mac in terms of his analogy to throwing up and in. If you want people to be in if you want people to be involved, you need to send a message that you need to be involved.
And correct.
If the historical people skate, then no message gets sent other than to the rank of gunnery sergeant at the recruit depots. Be careful. Watch your ass out there. It simply isn't worth it. I've enjoyed the conversation, though, this morning. I would tell you that I agree. The DOD, the stories that I read, and hell, I've been away from the Marine Corps for almost 20 years. They're pretty disturbing. They're pretty disturbing. What it looks like to me is a bunch of undisciplined jackasses. And I'm not talking about the entry-level people. I'm talking about mid-level and senior people that are making huge mistakes. And Marine aviation is just one of them. Enjoy when you have Master Guns on. Happy birthday, boys. Your thoughts on that, and I'll let you go.
No, I think he's correct. I mean, it's a rarity. I think the last time I saw a senior officer get any kind of break time was that one full-bird colonel for sexual molestation of children or something. But other than that, it's a rarity that I see someone senior get really punished. So I would agree with the last comment that was made.
All right. Well, I guess we'll watch the next court-martial with great interest then. John Ubaldi, retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant, joins me. You can find his work at Ubaldi Reports. You can find it on Facebook and on the Internet. What are you writing about this week?
This one is just talking about the challenges that are faced by veterans. I mean, we talk about, you know, support our veterans, but look what the problems with the VA. And then at the end of it, which I mentioned on the show, is we're so isolated from those who serve and those who haven't. So that's the crux of the article.
Got it. All right. I appreciate your input, as always.
Always. Hey, have some fun with your son when he comes in today, or he's here today.
He's probably asleep by now. The right? That's a long flight. And again, the stupid little things like sheets that like smell like real sheets. That's doesn't take much to get you go to sleep. So anyway.
Oh no, it doesn't.
No. All right, Master Guns, have a good day. Thanks for the visit.
You too, Mike. Take it easy.
Yeah. John Ubaldi. Ubaldi Reports. We'll take a quick break. Michael Musselman next.